on page number 383. Advice concerning all three jewels in common. There are six pieces of advice. You should repeatedly take refuge by recalling the good qualities of the three jewels. As I have already said, recall the difference between Buddhist and non-Buddhist teachers and between their teachings. And when we draw the distinction between the Buddhist and non-Buddhist, I think the most important point, as Kunjin Rinpoche spoke in his presentation on tenets, that it is due to the presentation of self and selflessness. And one of the major commentary related to East is the increase of dependent origination by Lama Tsongkhapa. And if we really think and contemplate further the teachings, then we will develop a genuine respect to Lord Buddha as a master who presented the teaching of dependent origination. So in this way, we will generate a faith with great emotions within us. Other than that, if you look at the Buddha, someone with the major signs and other qualities, then you will just feel this may be so. But when it comes to the teaching of dependent origination, and when you genuinely develop respect to Lord Buddha in terms of his teaching on dependent origination, then you will develop a genuine respect towards him. I think when it comes to the history and some of the life stories the Jataka tells, sometimes you just have to believe that this may be so. Recall the kindness of the three jewels. Offer the first part of whatever you eat or drink. Every time you eat or drink, offer the first portion so as not to forget that the Buddha, Dharma and Sangha should be the subject of your thoughts. And when we draw the distinction between the three jewels and to whom the people have to take refuge with each one of them, so this is in terms of the ordinary person's practice. But when it comes to the ultimate enlightenment state, the consciousness or the mind of Buddha himself is the component or the union of all the three jewels. Continue to read from page number 383. Such offerings are extremely beneficial because there can be no higher merit filled than the three jewels. But you should not spoil such offerings by apathy, carelessness, laziness, and so forth. Even when you offer water bowls, you are in the presence of the omniscience of the victorious ones. So it is said that you must like a new kitchen. And here there's a reference that when you offer, you have to offer as being the new manager or new attendant before the Buddha. So here the term new has significance. And the fifth Dalai Lama, of course, from the external perception and perspective, he is really someone who looks a great leader and a little bit reserved. But if you look at his personal daily perspective, he is very common and very general person. And when he lives inside his chamber, and other attendants, he live outside in the sun. And His Holiness used to call people by their name, but not by other things. So then he called the person with that name, and when he asked, where did you give those things? Then, and since it's cold climate, so people are just too cold and they won't give any answer. Then second time when he asks, where have you kept those things? Then they say, you have kept it somewhere a few days back. So therefore it shows that the relation between His Holiness, the fifth Dalai Lama, and his attendants were just like a normal friends. is someone really who really considers himself a very simple person and a very simple monk. And there's a small chamber within his palace, within his residence, and I think inside there are some storage of butter and something. And at that time in Tibet, we have to go and look for our own food. And His Holiness, the fifth Dalai Lama, at that time, gave to some of the Namgyal monastery monks, when they go out, take a little bit of the tea powder, tea leaf, and give to each monk when they go out. And today, sometimes, today that monk may not be there, so you do not have to take his part, you know, his portion. So he always makes sure that to whomever he give that present or the tea leaves, that monk actually is there to receiving end. I think one of the students of Mimi Gyurme Dorje, and he has written a life story of the fifth Dalai Lama. I'm sure that Ling Rinpoche also have knows about this story, and I've also sorry this writing, and I've also later seen this writing. So here, when you add the term new attendant, so the term new has a significance here. So the phrase here goes that, so it is said that you must be like a new kitchen manager. So the term new kitchen manager has a significance. Lead others to take refuge. You should stop people from accumulating evil karma when, for example, they take refuge in such Tritika teachers as Purna or bond teachers like Shenrup. In their dharma, their followers and other such bad company. And when we speak about making other people also pay refuge to the three jewels. So it is different in terms of Tibet, where the teachings of the Buddha has been there for hundreds of years. But now when we have different Buddhist centers all over the world, then we shouldn't pursuing earnestly about making others also take refuge in Buddha. So this will be kind of a missionary mission to spread the teachings, to make other people also enter Buddhist tradition. So therefore, we, as it is said that, taking the illustration for your own body, so do not harm other. So similarly, in other countries where the indigenous tradition of religion is something different from Buddhist, we have to be careful and while giving this teaching. And I've also stated a few days before its importance of generating religious harmony between different tradition. And also there's a phrase with respect to the external, internal, and the secret vehicles of the teaching. And when it comes to the external vehicle, there are two ways to interpret that. One way is apart from the Vajrayana, so to take the perfection of wisdom vehicle as the external or the outer one. But then there is other one is, I do not remember clearly which the text, I think, the Taksang Lozawa has quoted this in the general presentation of the Kalachakra initiation. And I do not know the exact citations, but Taksang Lozawa was referring and explaining that when the term external comes, we cannot discriminate or look at the other traditions, the non-Buddhist traditions, as something different or something inferior to the compared to Buddhist teaching. So therefore, this is a very good teaching. And of course, the great religions and the traditions in the world are very beneficial to different sections of the people. And all these teachings are based on compassion and love. Of course, as for the Christianity, they are prime in terms of helping other people. And of course, and there are other traditions also, Hindu and so on. And every religion speaks about the importance of cherishing other people and helping them. So therefore, when I read this phrase, this came to my mind. This is with respect to the phrase in the page number 383, lead others to take refuge. You should stop people from accumulating evil karma when, for example, they take refuge in such Tritika teachers as Purana or bond teachers like Sharaf in the Dharma. And generally, we also have the representation about reciting the Guru Yoga 6 times with 3 in the morning and 3 in the evening. So similarly, also for taking the refuge prayer can be done in that way. Continue reading from page 383. Also, you should lead people who have no faith or respect for the three jewels, but who might be suitable for the path by talking indirectly about the qualities of the three jewels in conversation. You should recall the benefits of taking refuge and take it 3 times in the day and 3 times at night. That describes that the three jewels are the perfect refuge. Develop faith in them with all your heart and take refuge in them 6 times a day. Page number 384. Lama Tsongkhapa has stated in the great stages of the path that do not abandon this even at the course of your life. If you violate this, you have truly given up your refuge. Likewise, you may not have given up the three jewels, but still take a second refuge in teachers and the like who go against the three jewels. You would then violate the instruction that you should not subscribe to another religion or give up your trust in your refuge. Here is an example of someone not forsaking the three jewels at the cost of his life. Once some Tirthika stole a Buddhist lay vow holder, they would not kill him even if he gave up his refuge. The Upasaka did not, so they killed him. He was reborn in celestial realms. Kyabje Phamongkhapa Rinpoche then reviewed this material. When page number 385, day 13, Kyabje Phamongkhapa Rinpoche quoted from Tsongkhapa, that great Dhammaraja, you have no assurance that you will not go to the lower realms after death. After this short introduction, he restated the headings already covered and reviewed the first subsection of the heading, teaching the means for happiness in your next rebirth. This first subsection deals with taking refuge. He then briefly taught how to pursue this practice. When people give oral discourses, there are separate headings for contemplating the sufferings of the lower realms and for taking refuge. However, when one is taking a practical teaching, one must meditate on a combination of these two headings as explained below. This is how it is done. After you petition your guru about the crown of your head, he emanates from his heart a complete refuge visualization. For example, the merit field, and this stands before you in space. Then think deeply about the individual sufferings of each of the hells and the sufferings of animals and angry ghosts. After each, as you become terrified of each lower realm, take refuge. This is the integration. An illustration, if in this world a petty criminal gets the support of an influential official, it sets the criminal's mind at rest, and he thinks, I cannot do much by myself, but I have the backing of a great official. That is why he sought this support. Similarly, if you are terrified of the lower realms, you will want to take refuge and take confidence from the thought, I have come under the protection of the three jewels, a refuge that won't prove deceptive. If you are taking refuge a number of times, it is enough to repeat the beginning of the preparatory rites. However, in this section of the Lamrim, you should combine 3 Lamrim meditation topics together. Although it is still alright to repeat only, I take refuge in the Guru, the tutelary deities, and the three jewels for your accumulation. Let us take the section on thinking about the suffering of the hell of continual resurrection as an example. The 3 meditation topics would go as follows. First, once you have insight into being reborn in this hell, You think how it will be impossible to endure it. At this point, you will have the thought, I have not now been reborn here. The second meditation topic comes in at this point. Think that though you have not taken rebirth in this hell now, you have accumulated very powerful karma to be born there. This karma is not declined, and you will not be able to purify it before you die. And as you cannot purify it, you are certain to be born there. This should terrify you. Then comes the third meditation topic. You think, these refuge objects to protect me from this lower realm should have immeasurable number of good qualities, omniscience, love, ability, and so forth. How lucky I am to have found such a refuge and then take refuge. Follow the same process for the lower two realms. After giving three excellent versions of the teaching on taking refuge, an elaborate version, a medium-length version, and a short version, Rinpoche continued. Developing believing faith in law of cause and effect, the root of all health and happiness. Because you have taken refuge in the three jewels, you can be sure that you have prevented one or two rebirths in the lower realms, but not that you will be free of the lower realms forever. If you want to be absolutely confident of never again going to the lower realms, there's a little bit grammar difference in the translations. If you want to be absolutely confident of never again going to the lower realms, you must try to follow the advice that goes with taking refuge. When a criminal seeks the protection of an influential official, the official may tell him, from now on, you should do this and not do that. If the criminal does not listen and instead only commits more crimes, then there is no way that even that official can protect him. The criminal will again run afoul of the law. Similarly, if you do not keep the advice that accompanies taking refuge, there is nothing that the three jewels can do for us at all. This is why our teacher taught that Dharma is the actual refuge to protect us from the lower realms. Dharma itself is the act of modifying our behavior according to the law of cause and effect. If you do not develop believing faith in the law of cause and effect, you will only want to practice a little virtue and to abandon a little non-virtue. As long as you do not properly modify your actions according to the law of cause and effect, you could still go to hell, despite being well-versed in the three baskets or being a great adept and yogi. Once Guru Avadhutipa looked back at Adisha while they were crossing a bridge and said, until you abandon grasping at the self, and while you still place little value on the law of cause and effect, remember that even scholars so-and-so and yogis such-and-such were reborn in hell. They say that even great Rad, the translator, has to spend a few moments in hell, about as long as bouncing a ball of yarn. A yogi in the Yamantaka Tantra was reborn as an evil-hungry ghost that physically resembled this tutelary deity. The ghost traveled from India to Tibet. Great Adisha said, if it remains here, Tibet will be harmed. So he dedicated ritual cakes to the ghost and made it go away. Devadatta knew one of Dharma, but this did not help him as he was reborn in the hotter hell. A Brahmin named Chanakya has achieved visions of Yamantaka and had killed many people through his paranormal powers. This he was reborn in the hell without respite. If you do not give to the law of cause and effect, even during a tantric retreat will not be of any help. Generally, we have a presentation about the three conditions, about the unwavering condition, then impermanence condition, and the potential condition. So we also need to think in this respect. Kepje Pamukwa Rinpoche told how an altar of Vikramashila Monastery was reborn as a hungry ghost with a deformed hand. From page number 388, thinking about cause and effect in general, this is two subsections, the actual way to think about cause and effect in general and thinking about some specific points. The actual way to think about cause and effect in general has four subheadings. First, how karma is fixed. Second, karma shows great increase. Third, one does not meet with something if one has not created the karma for it to happen. Fourth, karma once created will not disappear of its own accord. The Bhagavan himself spoke of karma in these four ways, so they are most vital. How karma is fixed. The transmission of the Vinaya says, whatever karma is created will bring a corresponding result. In other words, the result of some virtuous action, the cause, can only be happiness. This cause does not bring suffering. The result of some non-virtuous action, the cause, can only be suffering. This cause does not bring happiness. This is the fixed aspect of cause and effect. For example, it is fixed that from the seed of a hot-tasting plant comes only hot-tasting fruit. Likewise, it is certain that from the seed of a bitter plant comes bitter fruit, from a sweet plant, sweet. Now at that time, we create karmic causes. We must exercise care, for it is impossible to put things right once the cause has produced its results. When we get sick, for instance, having rituals performed may sometimes not help. The cause and effect go their individual ways. It's like if you plant the seed of a hot tasting plant, chili for example, and then once it has started to grow, you plant grapes and apricots and so on around the chili as a way of making it turn sweet. You can't make the chili sweet because the plant's growth is separate. Cause and effect is extremely subtle because any cause one accumulates will bring its corresponding result. The monk Priyabhadra had an extremely ugly body and an extremely sweet voice. Both of these were caused by the following. In a past life, he had been born a coolie when a certain king was building a huge stupa. The stupa was so enormous that he criticized, saying, "Why are they building this stupa so big? It will never get finished." Later, when the stupa was completed, he offered it a bell to expired what he had said. When Adisha was in Tibet, a Tibetan man was unconcerned when he committed some travels in his sight. This proved too much for Adisha, who said, "Alas, you should not be so brazen. Cause and effect is subtle. Cause and effect is deep." Once a monk split some grease over a cushion used by the Sangha in assembly. In his next life, he was reborn as a man with black back. Another time, when the monk was dyeing his robes, they turned into pieces of calf's flesh. He was accused of stealing a calf and had to spend 6 months in prison. This was said to be the result of the following. In a past life, he had accused an innocent Pratigya Buddha of stealing a calf. The Pratigya Buddha was thrown into king's prison for 6 days. Sagama, mother of Mrigaradhara, a minister of the city of Sharvasti, had 32 athletic young sons. Another minister of King Prasanajit had caused them to fall out of favor. The king had all the sons put to death, and the pile of their heads taken to their mother. This resulted from 32 thieves. In the past, stealing a bull and killing it, Sagama herself had been thieves' landlady when they killed the bull. Kepje Pamukwa Rinpoche told the stories in more detail. This is how karma is fixed. Reading from page number 390. And for a particular karmic causes and the particular individual result corresponding to that which happens at that particular time and place is really a very superhidden phenomenon. So when you hear referred to as the subtle cause and effect, it is something only to be understood by the omniscient mind. Internal causes produce much greater effects than external causes. Reading from page number 390. Even so, here is an analogy using an external cause and its results. A great tree grows from but a single tiny peach stone, and every year the tree yields hundreds of thousands of things, leaves and fruit. Though this is a big increase, internal causes yield even bigger results. Reading from page number 392, once, second para. Once, while Buddha was still alive, there was a Brahmin named Suvarnavasu. Gold coins will come out of his hands. There was an inexhaustible supply of coins said to be a result from an action in his past life as a timber merchant when he had once received a gold coin in payment for some wood and offered it, dropped in a clay pot full of water to Buddha Kashyapa. Kanakavasta was an elder of the Sangha at the time of his birth. Seven golden elephants appeared spontaneously in his family's treasure vaults. All the elephants' droppings and urine were gold, so Kanakavasta was well provided for. Seven kings, King Ajatashatru, had the elephants stolen, but this did not succeed because the elephants will sink into the ground and things became as they were before. This was said to have been the result of a past life when Kanakavasta had restored and gilded a clay statue of Buddha Kanakamuni's elephant mount. When the nun Shukla was born from her mother's womb, she was already wearing clothes of fine linen. When she was ordained, the clothes were transformed into robes. These are said to have been result from a past life when she had been a beggar and she and her husband had only one garment between them and had to take turns going outside. Yet they offered this garment to Buddha Kanakamuni, though it could have been meant their deaths. The act ripened into a tangible result for both of them in that very life. The king and his ministers gave them clothes. One must not belittle the practice of even small virtues. Page number 393. One does not meet with something if he has not created the karma for it to happen. When there is a war or other conflict, some people claim, I had no talisman against weapons, yet when people fire many guns, I came to no harm. You might take this to be something amazing, but it is a case of their not meeting with something for which they had not created the karma. Some people are at first unscathed by weapons, but later get killed. Not understanding cause and effect, some will say, this talisman must have weakened. It was nothing of the sort. Initially, these people had not met with karma. Later on, they did. When one does not meet with karma, one will not die, despite being burned in a fire. Once the householder Akanebu was burned in a fire together with his mother's corpse, but he did not die and later gain a hardship. Ajatashatru stole golden elephants seven times, but he derived no benefit because the elephant sank into the ground each time. King Udayana's concubine Shakyamavati had achieved the results of a never-returner. her retinue of 500 ladies had seen the truth. Yet when Markandeya, the Brahmin, set fire to her apartments, they could only fly a small distance away. Shyamavati said, "What rules us but not our karma? Who rules us but our own karma, which we ourselves created and accumulated? They all dive into the fire like moths into a flame and were burnt." There was also a woman servant named Kubjotara, who had not achieved any magic powers. She escaped from the fire by fleeing into a well. When Viradaka waged war against the Shakyas, all 77,000 of them were stream enterers, but this does not save them from being killed. A few who had not created the appropriate karma fled far away and escaped, while the great name of Shakya was brought low. The city of Ravana was buried under a rain of earth. The king, his ministers, and subjects were all buried, but two ministers escaped. These are some of the examples of people not meeting with something because of not possessing the karma for it. Karma once created will not disappear of its own accord. As the sutra tells us, the karma of embodied beings does not vanish over hundreds of eons. If the prerequisites and the time are right, karma will ripen to results. Karma does not grow still after a long time, nor does it lessen, become non-existent, and so on. Though small, it will sooner or later ripen into a result, as in the story of Arya, Vibhudatta, who had achieved hardship yet could not obtain alms, or if he did, the alms would vanish for some reason. Just as he was about to die, he took some soup of ash and water, and then he left his body. The householder Shirijata had in his mind stream so few and such small root virtues to contribute to his liberation that an arhat could not see them. Though extremely small, they were to give a result. He had received these root merits in the following way. Shirijata had taken rebirth as a fly in a past life. Following the scent of a dry animal dropping, he landed on it and by accident had circumambulated a stupa when the dropping was swept away by some water. If we are a follower of Lord Buddha, and without any distinction between whether one is a monk or a lay person, we have to practice the 10 positive actions and refrain from the 10 negative actions. And as Nagarjuna has presented, above the 10 positive actions, then the first one is not other commitments, such as not drinking alcohol and not indulging in sexual miscontact. And also, when you offer alms to other people, give them out of respect, and also practicing compassion and loving kindness. So these are the few factors, the 16 factors, in order to be practiced in order to generate a good human rebirth in the next and subsequent lives. This is accordingly presented by the Arya Deva in the 400 verses, that first we need to eliminate the negative karmas. Reading from page number 397, thinking about some of the specifics of the cause and effect. This is three sections, thinking about the black side of cause and effect. The actual black karma process, the difference that make for heavy or light karma, teaching what the result of these karmas are. If the law of cause and effect is so important, even on a very subtle level, what then is the basis for modifying one's behavior? The treasury of metaphysics tells us to approximately summarize, be it virtue or be it non-virtue, the paths of karma are taught to be tenfold. This is that virtue or non-virtue can be roughly summarized under 10 types. Even ordinary lay people, and not just the ordained, must modify their behavior. That is why Longdo Lama Rinpoche had wood blocks for quarter edition on confession of 10 non-virtues crafted and printed. Engaging in the deeds of Bodhisattva says, though you think you want to avoid suffering, you actually hasten on to suffering itself. You want happiness, but through benignness, you destroy your happiness like an enemy, like your enemy. In other words, we may desire happiness, but we don't understand how to create virtue, the cause for our having happiness. We may not want suffering, but we don't understand that we must abandon sin, the cause of suffering. So we destroy happiness, the very thing we want, as if it were our enemy. We modify our behavior the wrong way around. Some people who think at a low level might feel, I do not know that they are non-virtuous. But if we can learn 20 or 30 songs and tunes, it is impossible that we cannot know the 10 non-virtues after being introduced to them. We will go to the lower realms, not because we don't know the Dharma or having studied it, but because we know the Dharma but do not put it into practice. It is vital to put Dharma into practice. The 10 non-virtues, the things to abandon, are karma of the body as 3 aspects, that of species 4, and those of mind 3. In other words, killing, taking things not given to you, and sexual misconduct are the 3 non-virtues of body. Lying, divisive speech, harsh words, and idle gossip are the 4 of speech. The 3 of minds are covetousness, harmful intent, and wrong views. Each of these non-virtues are 4 components: the basis, intention, deed, and final step. The first, killing. The basis of killing involves another being quite distinct from oneself, that is to be killed, a sheep for example. The intention itself has 3 parts: the recognition, the motive, and delusion. Here the recognition is to recognize unmistakably that a thing is what it is. The motive is wanting to kill. The delusion is any of the 3 delusions or poisons. An example of killing out of hostility will be getting angry at, say, an enemy and striking him with a weapon. An example of killing out of attachment is killing a sheep because one is attached to its meat, height, and so forth. An instance of killing out of benighted ignorance is the intentional killing of a sentient being by a Tritika or any such person to make an offering of its meat and blood with the thought or claim that this is not a misdeed. The deed is carrying out the killing using poison, weapons, mantric charms, or whatever else may be used. Killing need not be something obvious like stabbing with a knife. It could also be done through black magic, mantras, and so forth. The final step is the other being's death before one's own. When there is a full set of all this, the karmic process of killing has been completed. Ordering someone else to do the killing is also no different from doing it yourself. Reading from page number 399, third para. We may set a good example here in the central province, but everywhere in Tibet, I believe Autan people are making others slaughter cattle for them, claiming they are our serfs. But the slaughterer and the person who made him do it, each commits the sin of taking a life. If the monk had done the killing with his own hands, only one person would have committed the sin. I would be happier if he had not asked the other person to assist and had instead done the killing himself. The other person would not have acquired the additional sin. We may think that we do not acquire the sin of actually killing a living being, but we do, for though we do not judge it so, it is still a great sin to make others kill for us. Once some monks and novices herded a goat, a sheep, and a bull into a pen, When the animals were about to be slaughtered, the god said to the other two, "They want to kill us." "But they take refuge every day," said the bull. "They fold their hands together, shut their eyes and say, 'May all sentient beings have happiness and its causes.' They will not kill us." "They are disciples of Buddha," the sheep said. "When they embark on the teachings, they promise to give the advice that goes with taking refuge. The main advice is not to harm sentient beings. Surely they will not harm us." The animals talk among themselves a great deal. Then early that morning, a wild butcher went to the monk's doorstep. The god saw him and listened. "I am busy today," the butcher said with some heat. Although he implored him, "Please ask somebody else," the monks insisted. "I have run out of things for lunch," one monk insisted. "Help me out by butchering these three today. It has to be today." The butcher had to promise to do it. The god heard that they were certain to die and told the other two. The three of them are miserable and crying helplessly. Just then the monk came, telling the beads on his rosary, taking refuge and reciting Om Mani Padme Hum. He had come to see if the goat, sheep and bull were fat enough. The three said that it was not right for monks to kill sentient beings or to get others to do so. It would be best if we were not killed. If we must die, monk, you yourself should kill us. The monk did nothing. The butcher returned and bound the legs of the three animals with a rope. He knocked the bull unconscious with a mallet, thrust a sharp sword in the goat's and sheep's rib up to the hilt, and used his sharp fingernails to cut their main blood vessels. Then the animals went through inconceivable suffering. The bull cried out in pathetic voice, "Hear me, all the Buddhas of 10 directions. I have evil tidings in such and such a place. The monks of this land are only pale reflection of monks, for they have sentient beings killed, sentient beings who were once their mothers of old." The victory standard of the Dharma was lowered, and the standard of demons raised on high. All the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas were saddened. This was the dialogue between the monk, the goat, sheep and the bull, and all for the sake of lunch for a few monks. A clear mirror gives a longer version. Reading from page number 401, taking what is not given. The basis is a possession that another holds to be his. The intention is to made out of three parts. The recognition should be unmistaken. The motive is wanting to take the thing that is not given to you. The delusion is any one of the three poisons. An example of anger would be stealing property from an enemy. An example of attachment is being attracted to someone else's property and stealing it through subterfuge. An example of benighted ignorance is the tradition among non-Buddhists that when a Brahman's fortune decline, we claim it is Dharma for him to steal. In other words, they do not count it as a misdeed. The deed need not be skulking around at night, for example. Taking what is not given could be an ordinary person's abuse of charity, an official meting out of an undeserved punishment, the sort of practice of generosity that gives away a penny in the hope of receiving a pound, and so on. When a monk breaks the monastic rules, he is made to do prostrations and the like. The point of doing this is so that none of the above mistakes will occur. To sum up, you have the thought of wanting to obtain a particular piece of property, even though the other person does not want to part with it. You obtain it through various deceitful means, making that person powerless to withhold it from you. The last para, sexual misconduct. For lay person, the basis is any wrong orifice. In other words, all orifice except the vagina. Any wrong time, such as when the woman is pregnant or during one day vows, at any improper place, such as before one's guru or a stupa, any wrong partner, such as one's own mother, and so on. For ordinary people, all sexual activity becomes sexual misconduct. Page number 402. The recognition is one must be in no doubt that the act is sexual misconduct. But when you break a major monk's vow of celibacy, they say it does not matter if you are mistaken or not. The delusion is one of the three poisons. The motive is wanting to engage in perversion. The deed is the two organs coming into contact, and so forth. The final step is completed when one experiences orgasm. Lying. One can lie about eight things, something seen with your own eyes, or not to seen, not so seen, heard with your own ears, or not so heard, perceived or experienced by your own nose, tongue, or body consciousnesses, not so perceived or experienced or known by your mind consciousnesses, or not so experienced or known. You must be speaking to a human being who knows how to speak and who understands what you are saying. The components of the intention are as follows. The recognition is recognizing that you are, for example, saying you do not see something when you in fact did. The motive is wanting to say such a thing. The delusion is one of the three poisons. The deed is speaking lying words or lying by some movement of your head without saying anything. For example, the final step is when the other person understands what you mean. Divisive speech. The basis can be either people who get along or those who do not. The recognition should be unmistaken. The motive is wanting to cause division. The delusion is one of the three poisons. The deed is as follows. You wish to divide people who get along or to prevent a reconciliation between those who do not. It makes no difference if your divisive speech is the truth or lies. Some people consider doing these things to be good. Not only is it not, divisive speech causes great harm and so can't be right. Page number 403. Harsh words. The basis of harsh words could be either a sentient being that serves as the basis for development of harmful intentions or an inanimate object such as a tomb. The recognition should be unmistaken. The delusion is one of the three poisons. The final step is when the meaning of the words is understood. The words must be understood. The karmic process is therefore incomplete if you say them to inanimate objects. Idle gossip. The basis is something frivolous. The recognition is recognizing that whatever it is you want to talk about is this thing. The actual basis of idle gossip may be anything at all, anything that enters the conversation by virtue of being recalled and that is made out to be paramount. These days, we among discuss a range of topics, the government, China, India, and so on, when a large group of us gets together in the monastery grounds or goes circumambulating. This is ideal gossip. Ideal gossip is the least of the 10 known virtues, but it is the best way to waste our human lives. The evil of ideal gossip bedevils even the sitting rows of public ceremonies, and monks regularly get together in their rooms and spend the whole day making such frivolous conversation, and the time is frittered away in idleness. I have a little bit uncomfortable with my eyes. Reading from page number 404. When in company, check your speech. In other words, you must be careful even if you are with only one friend. Harmful intent. The basis, delusions, and so on of harmful intentions are same as those previously discussed in harsh words. The motive is either wanting to inflict harm by, for example, beating and killing the basis of the harmful intentions, or wishing things like, wouldn't it be good if that other person is very ruined? The deed is putting effort. The final step is deciding. We perform the tantric activities of peace, increase, power, and worth. And if you do not do this with good motives, or solely for the sake of teaching and sentient being, there is a danger that they can become coercionist, harmful intent, or so on. We must therefore be careful. Reading from page number 405, the differences they make for heavy or light karma. There are six of these heavy by nature, The seven karmic actions of body and speech range from the heaviest first, killing, to be lightest, last of all. The reason is that author reflects the magnitude of suffering that other beings will have. An illustration, no matter how different we may be from each other, none of us cherishes our possession as much as we do our lives. Killing therefore causes more suffering to another person than taking something not given. However, with the three non-virtues of the mind, the lightest is first and the heaviest last of all. Heavy because of intention. When the intention is due to a very strong delusion by the non-virtue, using insulting words for example, is by nature light. As when one says, "You monkey old dog," out of very great anger, this act becomes very heavy. Page number 406. Heavy because of deed. An example of this is killing with intense torture. Also, killing an elephant, for example, is a heavier sin than killing an insect. Killing animals with huge bodies or with great physical strength is bigger sin because they experience greater suffering. And this is heavy due to the deed. In some lands, they burn live frogs, poultry, and insects. These acts are heavy both because of their nature and because of the deeds themselves. Heavy because of the basis. It is a heavy sin, for example, to cast dirty looks at karmically potent beings, such as one's guru, ordination master, bodhisattvas, members of the sangha, parents, and so forth. Heavy because of always being done. Idle gossip, for example, is heavy because one is always doing it. Heavy because no antidote has been applied. The sins in the mindstream of a person who never performs a single virtue are extremely heavy. There are 1 to 6 types of heaviness involved. Casting a dirty look at a bodhisattva when one is very angry, for example, or killing an animal, sadistically both incur 2 heavinesses. Singing and dancing out of great attachment has only 1 type of heaviness. All 6 types of heaviness are present if, say, a butcher who always sins and never does anything virtuous gets very angry with his parents and kill them sadistically. None of our sins are not heavy, and we are always adding to their heaviness. Teaching what the results of this karma are. There are 3 types of ripened results. Results concurrent with the cause and environmental results. When one commits any of the 10 non-virtues, one has to undergo 4 results instead of 3, because results with the cause are subdivided into 2 types, experiences with the cause and behavior with the cause. Reading from page number 407. Great non-virtues will lead to rebirth in hell, medium non-virtues to rebirth as a hungry ghost, and small ones to rebirth as an animal. Let us take killing as an example. The ripened result could be rebirth in hell. Later, one gets free of the hells and is reborn as a human being. But one's life is short with much sickness, the experiences concurrent with the cause. One may also have liked killing ever since childhood. The behavior corresponding with the cause. The environmental results occur in the surrounding world. Food, drink, medicine, and so on have little power. After we have been born in hell and lived with our bodies indistinguishable from the fires there, we could then be born among humans as an evildoer who likes to kill. Our killing perpetuates this process, and we are again thrown into lower realms. The most disheartening results of all are the behaviors corresponding with the cause. That is why they say we must work hard at the means to prevent behaviors corresponding to non-virtuous causes from occurring and to promote the behaviors corresponding with virtuous causes. Reading from page number 409. teaching is results. This is three sections. First, the ripened result. You take rebirth as a god of the higher realms. Because of highly virtuous karma as a desire realm god, owing to medium virtuous karma, and as a human being, owing to small virtuous karma. There are two types of these experiences. Concurrent with the cause are longer life, greater wealth, harmony with your spouse, people heeding what you say, harmony with your friends, and so on. Examples of behaviors concurrent with the cause appear in some people, reincarnations of the saints, for example, who right from birth develop renunciation and compassion and on their own. Environmental results. These are easy to understand. They are the opposites of the above environmental results for the 10 non-virtues, food, drink, medicine with great power, and so on. Thinking about the doors that unintentionally lead to powerful karma. This is four sections. Powerful due to the field, generosity becomes more and more powerful when practiced towards ordinary people, one's parent, monks, lay or olden bodhisattvas, Buddhas, and one's guru respectively. It is a much greater sin to give a bodhisattva a scornful look than to throw all the sentient beings of the three realms into prison and pluck out their eyes. It is more beneficial to fold one's hand out of faith as a sign of respect for a bodhisattva than to release all those sentient beings from prison and give them eyes. Similarly, if a monk kills an animal, he breaks only a minor vow. If he kills a human being, he breaks a major vow. Powerful because one had been a candidate for vows. A sutra says one's virtue is much more extensive if one has taken vows than if one is not. And the same holds for non-virtues. It is a heavier sin for someone often to commit misdeed than for a lay person to indulge in 10 negative actions. If you take a vow, you will receive virtue continuously. And if you take an unvirtuous vow, you will continuously receive non-virtue. Reading from page number 411. The local butcher and the woman who serves alcohol are examples of people who have taken unvirtuous vows, and their sins will continually increase even while they are sleeping or relaxing. Two people may live together, and one of them may have taken a vow not to kill while the other is not. Both of them may equally not kill the whole time, but the person without the vows does not receive the virtue that comes from abandoning killing, whereas the virtue of the person with the vow will increase every day. Similarly, people with lay, novice, or full ordination vows. What happened? Similarly, people with lay, novice, or full ordination vows may not make any special effort to create root virtues, but at the very least, they still see an increase in 5, 36, or 200, and 53 types of virtue respectively, even when they sleep. And this applies to an incalculable degree, more than for any of the above, for people holding the bodhicitta vows. As engaging in the deeds of bodhisattva says, thereafter, even in their sleep or in unguarded moments, the merit has power. Much merit comes to them continually and will become as enormous as space itself. People with tantric vows see 100,000 times more increase than even this. The someone who has not taken any vows does not create the special root virtues unless he does so specifically. Contrast this with someone holding vows who every day sees an increase in virtue, so profits greatly. The narrow-minded should therefore not have wrong views. Even lay people must be encouraged to take one-day vows, one-day fasting vows, and bodhicitta vows. There are two types of prohibitions, natural and declared prohibitions. Prohibitions of the first type are assumed to be as follows. One of their features is their cause. One's actual motives are non-virtuous ones. Another feature is their nature. Their natures are sinful and they embody non-virtue. Yet another feature is their result. A part of their nature is that they are capable of ripening into an unpleasant result. How hot is the tea? Ready to drink? So then tea blessing first.
His Holiness is asking how many pages he has covered so far. 64 pages have been covered. So if the tea is hot, don't be in a hurry to finish it, because then you'll sweat also, His Holiness says. His Holiness wants to take a candy. how sweet it is. It's a cough drop, I think. Down there, it looks. Somebody has his mug or bowl on his head. Perhaps he didn't get tea. Put your mug on your head so the people who serve tea could see you and bring you tea. Perhaps he felt shy now, or he was playing with his mug or bowl. Oh, Rinpoche. Rinpoche, nga di chgo tu. Di zoro tu. So I will keep reading the book. Radio, Jorana. Oh. Kare. And on page 413, paragraph 4. Has in this summary in the middle of the paragraph, and examples of virtuous throwing karma and virtuous completing karmas are being the horse or mule of Dalai Lamas and Panchen Lama, or being their pet dogs. Single karmic action can throw one into many bodies in succession. For example, insulting someone once with the words, "You're like a frog," can result in taking 500 rebirths as a frog. Or many karmic actions can result in one taking a single body, and so on. There are many other types of karma. Karma one is obliged to undergo, karma one is not obliged to undergo, karma one has accumulated through one action, actions done that accumulated no karma, karma that one accumulated without doing anything, the results of karma that is one that one is certain to undergo can occur in three different time periods, with visible results owing to some special motive or merit field. One experiences the results during the same period that the karma was accumulated. With karma that to be undergone after rebirth, one experiences the results of a karmic action in the next rebirth. With karma to be undergone in a number of rebirths' time, one undergoes the results of a karmic action in the rebirth after next or in a subsequent rebirth. You should refer to such works as Tsongkhapa's great or medium stages of the path to understand these in more detail. In the next, thinking about some of the specifics, we should therefore fear the results of virtue and have the ethics of abandoning the 10 non-virtues. If we practice the 10 virtues properly, we will not fall into the lower realms and instead merely achieve an exceptional rebirth as human being or God. Yet This alone is insufficient for us to achieve liberation and omniscience. If we could gain this passion, and so forth, and then this quotation from Tsongkhapa, you will not cover much ground until you achieve a rebirth with all the characteristics for practicing the supreme path. Train yourself to have courses for them all. There are three headings here: the ripened qualities, their functions, and the courses to achieve them. Regarding the ripened qualities, there are eight of these qualities: long life, a handsome body, high family, great wealth, trustworthy speech, great power and fame, being a male, being strong in mind and body. To take an example, in this world, good fruit in the field, in a field come from good seed. Make no mistake, our wealth, the fact that we have such a sound, high rebirth and so on, all in truth come from karma, karmic actions in our past lives. And merely having the fruits of this year's harvest is not much help. One must make an effort to plant the seed for next year's. Similarly, it is not helpful to have no curiosity about one's future rebirth or to think about them and then get terrified. One will get nothing at all if one simply achieves the course for an ordinary high rebirth. One must achieve the courses to obtain a special type of rebirth suitable for practice of Dharma. Even more, one must have the eight ripened qualities, long life, a handsome body, and so forth. The functions of the ripened qualities. The first of these eight qualities, long life, will allow you to progress in the Dharma because you can spend a lot of time creating root virtues for your own sake and for others' sake. Because of the second, a handsome body, you'll attract disciples merely through your looks. Atisha was an example of this. The third, a high family will make others pay proper heed to your orders. The fourth is great wealth. Because you'll have great resources and a large retinue, you'll firstly attract sentient beings through your material possession. Then you'll ripen them with Dharma. So this quality gives great impetus to your work for others' sake. The fifth, trustworthy speech, enables others to apprehend the truth or emptiness. The sixth, great power and fame, makes others follow your orders quickly and not disobey them as if they were the king's command. The seventh, being a male, means that you will not be afraid in a crowd, and that you will live a deserted place. You will have, and when you live in a deserted place, you will have few hindrances and interferences in practice and Dharma and so on. The eighth, being strong in mind and body, has these functions. You need a strong body to practice great austerity, as Milarepa put it. You can then practice Dharma during adversity. With a strong mind, you will not despair, no matter what may be involved in benefiting yourself and others. You will always be most happy to do whatever is necessary. You will gain powerfully conceptualizing mind, and this will act as a course for your rapidly gaining clairvoyant powers, the courses of to achieve these ripened qualities. Although it is good for Dharma practitioners to receive these eight, you may wonder, will I receive them? You definitely will. It is like farmers who plant seed in the spring, knowing that they will get the fruit in autumn. So when the Buddha lived, whether it's at that time or other times in India, it is the male body is valued more than the female body. So it is in accordance with the custom and culture of that time in society. So this is what I actually see. some tens of thousands of years ago, there were very few human beings living together in as householders in families, and there was no leadership. The idea of leadership, as the number grew, and also people started farming, and then people talked about my field and deer field and so forth. There's possession developed, and people felt more possessive about what they have. And then the leadership, idea of leadership came. At that time, education had no role. And so, for leadership, the one criteria that people looked for was physical strength. Like the animals which go in herds. And so sometimes we also have this term, the leader of the herd. And so that leader of the herd is... And so similarly, this idea of leadership developed amongst human beings, and therefore men became leaders. And because of the societal custom, it also had influence in religion, on the religion. And within the religion, in Buddhism, of course, Buddha gave equal right to bhikshus and bhikshunis. But when it comes to sitting arrangement, the bhikshus, because they were formed earlier, they sit above the bhikshunis. But as education started in human society, then people also have worked for equality of sex or gender equality. And therefore, since education, therefore people who are educated and became leaders. And in the modern ages, women became leaders as well. So in today and in the future, it's not enough only to have education for gender equality, but it's important for promotion of the development of love and compassion. For that, women, biologically, when they see others suffering, they have greater sensitivity to the suffering. This is what scientists through their experiment have found and say. For example, when they show some movies or in which people are undergoing intense suffering, and two persons, a man and a woman, when they watch this picture, there is this more sensitivity and empathy from the women more than the men. So in history, in our history, human history, most of the people who are called heroes were male, and also butchers were also most of them are male. Whereas in hospitals, the nurses and people who look after the sick are mostly women. And so here, there's no talk of religion as such, but biologically, women carry children in their womb for 9 months. And when the child is born, the women take care of the child and breastfeed them. And so not only humans, but even animals like dogs and birds and so forth also take care. In most cases, women take care of the female, take care of the offsprings. And so women are more sensitive to the the suffering of others, and therefore women have become very important in the promotion of, when we talk about promotion of love and compassion, women could play a better role. And therefore, I have been telling people, I'm not just joking about it, I have been saying that it's possible that in the future there could be a female Dalai Lama. And in our Tibetan history also, there have been very highly realized female reincarnations. And within Buddhism, the founder, teacher, Buddha himself, gave same right to bhikshus and bhikshunis. And Chinese government today say that what Dalai Lama talks about, not coming in his reincarnation or in the next reincarnation, or coming could be my incarnation could be of reincarnation could be of women and so forth, are something it's not right, they say. In the past, Chinese emperors had some influence on high Tibetan lamas, and at that time, of course, they were also the emperors themselves were Buddhists. And so something that the and they revered the Tibetan lamas, and what the someone who accepts or the religion did, I mean, cannot be done by those atheists. And so I tell the Chinese leadership that if you want to actually deal with the Dalai Lama in reincarnation, first you have to find the reincarnation of Mao Zedong and then Deng Xiaoping. And if you have done, once you have done that, then you could talk about the finding Dalai Lama's reincarnation. And so what is being said here in the text is not just looking down upon women. And so some people, like feminists, may think that the Buddha, in Buddhism there is this idea or attitude of looking down on women. That's not true. Or the Buddha did so. It's not true. That's too much. So with a strong body, you are able to achieve your goals, and you can also help others, it says. So if you were born as with a body where you create lots of negative karmas, like those people or leaders or rulers born in borderlands or barbarian places, so in the case of this practice pertaining to the beings with slow scope, the crux of the practice is engaging in what has to be adopted and or discarding those that need to be abandoned on the basis of understanding the law of causality. We're switching to Chamar Lamrim, which is already stopped at this point. Third, Gambi Lidri Martha, Alihori. Second, considering the law of causality in terms of the positive karmas, which has, so positive karma regarding that. taking avoidance of the killing, for example. When an ordinary family, an ordinary householder receives, is about to receive some visitor, and then the person thinks of killing an animal, but then when the person thinks over, he finds that just for the sake of pleasing someone who's going to visit me, am I really going to kill a poor animal, and feels sorry for that, and then abstains from killing. And so thinking that this animal and I have the same kind of body, although we have different bodies, but then we have the same kind of life, and we hold our lives, we are same in cherishing our own lives, and therefore in trying to please someone, am I really going to kill this animal, and so that I'm going to create a very grave negative karma that would give a ripened effect in the future. And so thinking this over, avoiding and thinking to avoid this negative action, and also working towards trying not to commit that negative action. And then when one has made the determination not to kill that animal, one has actually followed the entire the trajectory of this positive action of not killing. And so similarly, it gives the example of the stealing, where, for example, if someone is compelled to steal something, but then by thinking over that, if I have wealth, what would happen to me? And there would be lots of problems, difficulties, sufferings, that it entails, such as having to protect it or being concerned and worried that you will lose it and so forth. And then also thinking that the stealing creates a negative karma, which would lead me to the lower realms of existence. And therefore, you abstain from, thinking of abstaining from, have that motivation, which is called detachment. And then when you move towards, put effort in abstaining from the stealing, and when once you make the full determination not to steal, you have completed that path of this positive action of not stealing, and so forth. And so this should be, this logic or understanding should be, applied to the rest of the positive actions, the eight positive actions. And sometimes, with regard to the monastics or people who have taken vows, such as the eight pratimoksha vows, what we can tell is that if someone were kind of forced to, or were in a dire kind of a put in a difficult situation where they have to, they were forced to kill some animal or somebody, and if they really had to do that, but then when they are actually going towards committing that action, you can tell from their physical expression that they have actually taken vows not to kill and so forth by their the way they react. act, thinking that I am a bhikshu and I must not kill, and therefore the physical and verbal actions would speak about that they are the ones who have kept vows and so forth. It says. So if you are able to understand the key points or the essence of these points, it says your interest and your enthusiasm showing restraint and in these negative actions, refraining from negative actions and creating the positive actions would be greater in intensity as well. And then there are many other ways in which you can, it says, collect or create positive energies or positive merit continuously. And then with regard to the ripened effect, it says the small ones of the positive actions will give rise to, rebirth as a human being, and then the intermediate strength, the positive actions with intermediate strength will lead you to the higher, the desire realm gods, and deities in the desire realm. And then the big ones, the more powerful ones, will give rise to rebirth as form and formless realms, rebirth as a formless realms. And then with regard to the effect, which is similar in to the course and also the environmental effects of the environment, as a human being, once you have created the positive action of not killing, what will be the result is that you have long life and you will be healthy without sick. Becoming sick or without diseases, and you will also have all the food and drinks and so forth, as with medicines and so forth, will be powerful and. They will not cause sickness in you, and so forth. And so this could also be related to the rest of the positive actions, like not stealing and so forth. And so it says, if you could have a genuine confidence in the law of causality of positive and negative karmas, you have begun the root of all dharma practices. Without this confidence of the law in the law of causality, it's impossible to gain true conviction in any of the teachings of regarding the lower and such as the teachings of the law of vehicle, Mahayana, or four tantras, and to develop the confidence in engage in the practices of accumulating merit and purifying negativities, prayers, supplications to your gurus, and to in order to gather a corpus of positive energies or merit, and. Reflect on the instructions continuously in instructions that you find in the scriptures continuously. And it says, when you are left alone, when we are left alone, we may think we believe in the law of causality and the three jewels. But when you check closely, leave alone, believing in the law of causality to be true, believing that the law of causality is true, it is difficult for us to even suspect that it's true. And It also says using what is said here, a key, as a key. It's important for us to acquaint ourselves for a long time, over a long period of time, with the extensive teachings on the law of causality that are given in the scriptures of the Buddha. And so this is actually there's also a quotation from Potowa where he talks about two clans fighting with each other, and therefore the people from the other party or the other clan would really fear to pass through the region of the rival party. And And similarly, it talks about the crops. So although they may not be fighting as such and actively happening, but then people in that region, in that region would feel that if there were some fighting, it's definite that I would have to lose my head, and therefore I will not go to this other place. And so similarly, if you have even a suspicion about the truth or about the negative actions giving rise to suffering, and if it's really true that there's nothing more terrible than committing the negative actions you would feel, and therefore you will abstain from negative actions, engaging in negative actions, fearing the lower realms of existence, your rebirth in these. So Padua exhorts us to says that if you have even a suspicion about the truth about law of causality, then it will help us. I mean, it will serve as an impetus to engage in the practice of the Dharma with whatever ability. I mean, with all your ability, and but. We are full, he says, we are only obsessed with these wrong views, and therefore we don't really even suspect the truth of the law of causality. And therefore, we do not engage in the practices of overcoming or avoiding the negative actions, and avoiding the negative actions. But we indulge in mundane activities of looking after, obsessing with our near and dear ones, and trying to overcome the our rival parties, adversaries. So this is very true, it says. So here in this text, there is mention of one's kind lama. So His Holiness is wondering whether this is referring to Shanglawa or Agusana Sherab Gyatso. So we are, His Holiness is going through the four opponent powers. And the comment His Holiness made is regarding the second opponent power, which is the application of the antidote. And then the third is not repeating the same negative action, refraining, showing restraint. So if someone, a person who has been afflicted by poisonous food will show abhorrence to such food in the future. So similarly, you should have this strong regret for the negative actions that you have done in the past, and then even at the cost of my life, make this determination that even at the cost of my life, I will not indulge in these negative actions and show restraint. And it's not only do should you do that, make that kind of determination, if one should engage in practices where one actually avoids the negative actions, which are easy to avoid, easy to practice, and so those negative actions with which you are prone, which you could easily indulge in, regarding them also, you should make this determination that at least in a month or in a day or in a few days, I will abstain from this. Put effort in abstaining from this, I mean, as best as I could. And then you can also do this visualization of the purification with the help of with the visualization of the merit field, and pray that the merit field blesses you to purify the negative actions and invoke them, and make your prayer that you may be able to overcome all these negative actions quickly. And then the fourth opponent power is the opponent power of the support. So at the end of this, it says that, in short, due to the kindness of my guru now, I know how to practice these four opponent powers. And this is a time where I have the opportunity and all the conditions for doing this practice. And therefore, I will put effort in applying these four, applying myself to these four opponent powers. And make myself confident not to regret at the time of death. And then make your prayer to the Lama and deity for the purification, and invoke them. Whose mind's wisdom, eyes blinded by ignorance. Even if I do not reach this state, may I be held in your loving compassion for all my lives. Manjushri, may I find the best of complete graded paths of the teaching, and may I please all the Buddhas by this practice. Using skillful means, drawn by the strong, force of compassion, may I clear the darkness from the minds of all beings with the points of the path as I have discerned them. May I uphold Buddha's teachings for a very long time. With my heart going out with great compassion, in whatever direction the most precious teachings have not yet spread, or once spread and have declined, may I reveal this treasure of happiness and aid. May the minds of those who wish for liberation be granted bounteous peace, and the Buddha's deeds be nourished for a long time. Even by even this great path to enlightenment completed due to the wondrous virtuous conduct of the Buddha's nearest offsprings, may all human and non-human beings who eliminate adversity and create conducive conditions for practicing the excellent paths never be parted in any of their lives from the purest path praised by the Buddhas. Whenever someone makes an effort to act in accordance with the tenfold Mahayana virtuous practices, may they always be assisted by the mighty ones, and may oceans of prosperity spread everywhere. Conduct of the Buddhas and their offsprings.
Practices. of prosperity spread everywhere. Operations of evil thoughts and deeds of the negative forces of humans and non-humans who harbor malice through their perverted prayers against the teaching of